Why have you come before the Ivy Throne?
The Krasian advance threatens us all. Refugees flood the countryside, more than the hamlets can easily absorb. And when they move on Lacton...
This is ridiculous! At the very least, show your face when addressing the Duke.
Apologies, Highness.
The warded man drew back his hood, and in the sunlight streaming in through the windows, the ward seemed to crawl across his skin like living things. Thamos and Jansen, having seen this before, kept composure, but the other princes could not entirely hide their shock.
Since you have no name, I suppose you'll want us to call you Lord Warder.
I'm as peasant as they come, Highness. No lord in any land.
Circumstances of birth notwithstanding, I find it hard to believe a man who styles himself the Deliverer doesn't think himself as much a lord as any of royal blood. Or do you think yourself above such things?
I'm not the Deliverer, Highness. I've never claimed otherwise.
That's not what your tender in Cutter's Hollow believes, by his own reports.
Shepherd Pitha waved a sheaf of papers in the air.
He's not my tender. He can believe as he wishes.
Actually, he can't. If he's representing the tenders of the Creator in Angiers, he owes his loyalty to His Grace, the Shepherd, and the Council of Tenders. If he is preaching heresy...
That is a fair point, Jansen. We'll have to look into that.
You could perhaps have the Council of Tenders summon and inquisit Tender Jonah, Your Grace.
Here, here. You should do that with all haste, brother.
Your former mentor, Tender Hayes, would be fit to replace him in the Hollow and minister the refugees, Your Grace. He has experience working with the poor and is loyal to the Ivy Throne. Perhaps you can convince the Council to send him.
Convince them, Jansen? I am their shepherd. You tell them I said to send Tender Hayes.
As you say, Your Grace.
As for you, why did the Hollowers rename their hamlet Deliverer's Hollow if you have no sway with them?
I never wanted the change. They did it against my wishes.
Save that ale story for a taproom of drunks. Of course you wanted the change.
To what end, Highness? It does nothing but further a notion I would rather quash.
If that is so, you will have no argument if His Grace sends the town council a royal decree commanding that they change it back, of course.
The warded man shrugged.
Do it.
As you wish, Your Grace.
All this is neither east nor west. We tested your wards. I killed a wood demon myself with that arrow. I want more. And the other combat wards you've developed, along with training for my men... What do you want in exchange?
It matters not what he wants. The Hollowers are my subjects, and I won't pay for what they owe the Ivy Throne regardless.
As I told Prince Thamos and Lord Jansen, Your Grace, the Corlings are the real enemy. I won't withhold warded weapons from any who want them.
I can consult with the Warders Guild to select warders to send to the Hollow, if Your Grace wishes. Perhaps with a contingent of wooden soldiers to guard them.
I'll lead them personally, brother.
Very well.
What of the refugees from Ryzen? Will you take them in?
My city has no room for thousands of refugees. Let them succor in the hamlet. We can offer them, what was it again, Jansen?
Royal asylum and the protection of the crown to any who swear an oath of loyalty to Angiers.
Yes.
That is very generous, Your Grace, but these people are starved and penniless, lacking basic necessities of survival. Surely, in your mercy... You can offer more than that.
Very well. I'm not heartless. Jansen, what can we spare?
Well, Your Grace, we can forgive the Hollow its delinquent lumber shipments, of course.
Of course.
And while in the Hollow, your royal warders can offer their expertise in protecting the refugees in the night, as can the wooden soldiers.
Of course, of course.
Please allow me to review further, Your Grace, and I will present you with detailed lists of what resources we have available.
See to it.
As you command.
And what of the Krasian advance?
I've seen no evidence that the Krasians will advance, apart from your own claims.
They will. The Avisia demands it.
You know a lot about the desert rats and their heathen religion. Lord Jansen says you lived among them for a time.
That's correct, Your Grace.
Then how can we be sure where your loyalties lie? For all we know, you're a corspond Avisian convert yourself. Knight, if you won't tell us who you are and where you're from, how do we even know you're not a Krasian yourself under all those wards?
I assure you that isn't the case. My loyalty is to Thesa.
Prove it.
How shall I prove it, Your Grace?
My herald is out in the hamlets and cannot travel as swiftly as you in any event. Go to Fort Milne for me and speak to Duke Euchre. Invoke the Pact.
The Pact, Your Grace?
The Pact of the Free Cities. In the year zero, after the first ward walls were finally built and a semblance of order restored to the ravaged countryside, the surviving Dukes of Thesa signed a mutual non-aggression pact called the Pact of the Free Cities. In it, they recognized the death of the King of Thesa and the end of his line, and accepted one another's sovereignty over their territories. The pact bans the taking of territory by force and promises the unity of all cities in putting down its violators.
Did the Krasians sign this pact?
Krasia was not part of Thesa, and thus was never subject to the pact. However, the exact wording of the pact is as follows. Should the territory or sovereignty of any duchy be threatened by human design, it shall be the obligation of all signees and their posterity to intercede in unity on behalf of the threatened party. The pact was so worded to outlaw all warfare among men, because there were so few of us left after the depredations of the return. Thus, it remains binding, regardless of whether the Krasian leader signed it.
Do you think Duke Euchre will see it?
Are you in audience with my secretary or me?
Apologies, Your Grace. No disrespect was meant.
Euchre will try to find a way out of the pact like a calling longs for a gap in the wards. But without support from him, Angiers cannot afford to commit to attacking the Krasian host.
You would violate the pact yourself?
Intercede in unity, the pact says. Should I clash with the desert rats alone, only to have Euchre sweep in and destroy both our weakened armies and declare himself king?
Why me, Your Grace?
Don't be modest. Every jungler in Thesa sings of you. If your arrival causes half the stir in Milne that it has in Angiers, Euchre will have no choice but to adhere to the pact, especially if you sweeten the call with your battle wards.
I won't withhold them for political gain.
Of course not, but Euchre need not know that, I...
Very well. I'll do it. I'll need your seal, Your Grace, so Duke Euchre knows this message is authentic.
You'll have whatever you need.
Your Grace, the Lord Jansen bade me to inform you that the Duke's audience with the delegation from Cutter's Hollow is at an end.
The lady-in-waiting spoke to the Duchess.
Thank you, Emma. Please inform Lord Jansen that we will meet them in the antechamber when we've finished our tea.
Emma curtsied smoothly and vanished. Wanda got to her feet.
There's no need for haste, young lady. It does men good to have to wait for a woman now and again. It teaches them patience.
Yes'm.
The Duchess Mum got to her feet.
Come here, girl, and let me have a proper look at you.
Wanda came closer, and Arain walked around her, examining her worn and patched clothes, the jagged scars on her homely face, and reaching out to squeeze her shoulders and arms like a butcher examining livestock.
I can see why you chose to lead a man's life, you being built like one. Do you regret missing out on a life of dresses and blushing at suitors?
Lysia got to her feet, but the Duchess Mum raised a finger at her without even turning, and Lysia kept her tongue behind her teeth.
I ain't never given it much thought.
What's it like, girl, to stand among men when they go to war?
Feels good to kill demons. They killed my Da and a lot of my friends. Some of the Cutters treated us women different at first, trying to keep us behind them when the demons came, but we kill as many as they do. And after a few of them got pounced on for looking out for some woman instead of themselves, they wised up quick.
The men here would be worse, by far. I had to abdicate power when my husband died, even though my eldest son was an idiot and his brothers little better. Creator forbid a woman sit the ivy throne. I've always been a little jealous of the way old Bruna dominated men openly, but that sort of thing just isn't done here. Not yet, anyway. Stand tall in the night for me, girl. Stand tall for every woman in Angiers. And never let anyone, man or woman, make you stoop.
I will, Your Grace. I swear it by the sun.
Arain tapped her chin for a moment, then snapped her fingers. She snatched up the little silver bell on the table and rang it. In an instant, one of her ladies-in-waiting appeared.
Summon my seamstress immediately.
The woman curtsied and scurried off, and moments later another woman arrived, assisted by a young girl with a leather-bound book and a feathered quill.
The girl,
Arain pointed to Wanda.
Take her measurements. Everything.
The royal seamstress nodded and produced a series of knotted strings, calling the measurements out to the girl, who noted them in her book. Wanda stood awkwardly while the woman worked, moving Wanda's limbs about like a doll's and running her hands over places that made the girl blush furiously. The white scars on her face became even more prominent as her cheeks colored. The seamstress came over to Arane and Leisha when she was finished.
It's a challenge, Your Grace. The girl is flat where a woman should be curved, and broad where a woman should be narrow. Or perhaps a few ruffles on the dress to distract the eye, and a fan to help her hide her scars.
Am I an idiot? I'd soon as put Thamos in a gown as that girl.
Oh, apologies, Your Grace. What did you have in mind?
I don't know yet. It will come to me, I'm sure. Run along now.
The woman nodded, quickly gliding out of the room with her assistant in tow. Arane turned to Leisha as she and Wanda prepared to go.
Bruna and I were great friends, dear. Something that was of great benefit to both of us. I hope we can be friends as well.
I hope so, too.
Why did you agree to go?
Roja spoke after Jansen had escorted the men back to the parlor and left them alone to wait for Leisha and Wanda.
Rhinebeck is just trying to be rid of you, because he's afraid his own subjects will flock to you.
I don't want that any more than he does. I don't want people to start thinking of me as some kind of savior. Besides, I have my own reasons for wanting to visit Milne. And going under Rhinebeck's seal is too good an opportunity to let slip past.
You're going to give them your battle wards.
Among other things.
All right. When do we leave?
There is no we here, Roger. I'm going to Milne alone. I'll be traveling at speed through the nights, and I don't need you slowing me down. Besides, you have apprentices to train.
What's the point? Whatever it is I do to the Corlings, it's not something I can teach.
Demon shit! That's quitting talk. You've only been training apprentices for a few months. We need those fiddle wizards, Roger. You need to find a way to get them ready.
The warded man took Roger's shoulders, looking into his eyes, and Roger saw the endless determination that burned in the man, and more, his confidence in Roger.
You can do this.
Garrett came to the warded man, dropping to one knee.
Let me go with you. I ain't afraid to gallop at night. I won't slow you.
Get up. I know you wouldn't slow me, Garrett, but you're not going either. I'm going to Milne alone.
But you need someone to protect you. The world needs you.
The world needs men like you more than it needs me, and I don't need a bodyguard. I have another task in mind for you.
Anything?
I don't need a guard, but Roger does. As Wanda guards Leisha, I want you to watch over Roger. His fiddle magic is unique and irreplaceable, and may turn the tide if we can harness it.
I swear it by the sun. I won't let him leave my sight.
Roger looked at the giant, unpredictable cutter with not a little apprehension, unsure if he should be comforted or terrified.
Let me use the privy in peace, at least.
Garrett slapped him on the back.
Ow. I'm leaving for Fort Milne before the North Gate is barred tonight.
The warded man spoke to Leisha on the carriage ride back to Giselle's hospit, after filling her in on the rest of his audience with the Duke, which had gone precisely as the Duchess Mum had predicted.
In fact, I mean to go as soon as I can pack Twilight Dancer for the journey.
Oh.
Rhinebeck wants me to go as his agent to Duke Euchre, petitioning him for aid in driving Krasians out of Thesan lands.
The warded man looked expectantly at her.
What?
No protests at my leaving? No insistent offers to accompany me?
I have business back in the Hollow, and you've made no secret that you want to spread the battle wards to every city in Hamlet. It's for the best.
I think so, too.
They passed the rest of the ride in silence and arrived back at the hospit as the apprentices were taking the linens off the lines.
Garrett, please help the girls haul the laundry baskets.
Garrett nodded and went off.
Wanda, the warded man will need ammunition for his ride north. Please fetch a few bundles of warded arrows.
Aye, mistress.
5 minutes of court and everyone's bowing to everyone else.
Roger, would you ask Mistress Giselle to have the girls pack food for his saddlebags?
Might be best I stay and chaperone.
Leisha gave him such a withering glare that he shrank back. He bowed with a sarcastic flourish and headed off. Leisha and the warded man went to the stables, and he fetched his warded saddle and the stallion's barding.
You will be careful, won't you?
I wouldn't have survived so long if I wasn't.
Fair point. But I didn't just mean with the Corlins. Duke Euchre has a harder reputation than Rhinebeck.
You mean he's not led around by the nose by his counselors? I know. I've met Euchre before.
Is there anywhere you haven't been?
Over the eastern mountain range, through the western wood, past the Krasian deserts to the seashore. But I'll see all of those places one day, if I can.
I'd like to see them as well, Creator willing.
Nothing stopping you or anyone from going anywhere now.
I meant with you.
Leisha swallowed her words. The warded man had said it all. She was his Roger. There was no point in pretending otherwise any longer.
You be careful too, Leisha.
Leisha slapped his hand away and embraced him.
Goodbye.
An hour later, he was galloping north from the city, and though her eyes were wet, Leisha felt as if a great weight had lifted from her. Leisha fell into her old patterns of the hospit, giving the apprentices a lesson and doing rounds while Giselle caught up on her correspondence. Part of her thought hungrily of the books of warding in the satchel in her room upstairs, but she resisted the temptation to immerse herself in Arlen's lore, for she knew once she did, she would be able to think of nothing else. Learning was as addictive to Leisha as the jolt of magic that came with killing a Corling with his warded axe was to Garrod. But for a few hours, at least, she decided to take comfort in the simple pleasure of grinding herbs and treating patients with nothing worse than a broken bone or a bad chill. When last rounds were completed and the apprentices shooed off to bed, Leisha brewed a pot of tea and took a cup to Giselle's sitting room. The room would be empty at this time of night, and there was a warm hearth and a small writing desk there. Leisha had her own correspondence to catch up on. Herb gatherers throughout the duchy that she kept in touch with, many of whom had yet to be informed of Bruna's passing last year. Like grinding herbs, keeping in touch with old friends was another thing Leisha had not had time for since she and Roger met the warded man. She drew near the sitting room. Leisha entered the room to see Roger behind Giselle's desk, a carafe of brandy open in front of him. There were wet shards of glass on the stone of the fireplace.
Are you trying to burn the whole building down?
Leisha pulled a rag from her apron and ran to wipe up the alcohol before it caught flame. Roger ignored her, taking another glass and filling it.
Giselle won't be pleased at you shattering her glass, Roger.
Roger reached into the motley bag he carried everywhere. He threw a handful of the warded man's ancient gold coins on the desk.
She can buy 100 more now.
Roger, what is the matter with you? If this is about sending you away before...
I don't care how you and Arlen said goodbye in the stables.
I didn't stick him, if that's what you're implying.
Your business if you did.
Then what is it?
Roger looked at her a moment, then reached into his bag of marvels again, producing a slim wooden box he opened to reveal a heavy gold medallion.
Minister Jansen gave this to me. It's a royal medal of valor. The Duke gave it to Eric for saving me the night Riverbridge fell. I never knew.
You miss him. It's only natural. He saved your life.
The Corey did!
Roger hurled the medal across the room. Leisha put her hands on Roger's shoulders, but his lips curled, and for a moment, she thought he might strike her.
Roger? What happened?
Roger pulled away from her hands and turned away.
I used to think it was just a nightmare. We were dancing, my mother and I, while Eric played the fiddle. My father and a messenger, Gerald, were clapping along. It was off season, and there was no one else in the inn that night. There was a crash as something hit the door. I remember my father had been arguing that morning with Master Peter, the warder. But he and Gerald said not to worry. I guess we should have, because as we all turned to the sound, a rock demon burst through the door.
Oh, Roger!
The rock was followed by a blaze of flame demons pouring in around its legs, and it smashed the lintel and jambs of the doorway to fit through. My mother snatched me up in her arms, and everyone started shouting at once. But I don't remember what was said, except Gerald threw his warded shield to Eric and told him to get my mother and me to safety. Gerald took his spear and my father an iron poker from the fireplace and they turned to hold off the Corlings. And my mother ran to him. But Eric shoved her aside, snatched up his bag of marvels, and ran from the room. Honest word. Eric only helped me because my mother shoved me into the bolt hold with him. Just before the demons took her. Even then, He tried to leave me.
He reached out to Arik's bag of marvels, running his fingers across the worn velvet and cracked leather patches.
It wasn't threadbare and faded then. Arik was the Duke's man, and this bag was bright and new and befit a royal herald. And that's the truth of Arik's valor. Saving a bag of toys. A bag I carried around with me everywhere. Like it's just as important to me.
Roger shook the bag in Leisha's face, then his eyes flicked to the fire roaring in the hearth, and he moved around the desk toward the fireplace.
Roger, no!
Leisha moved to intercept him and grabbed the bag. They locked stairs. Roger's eyes wide like a cornered animal. Leisha put her arms around him, and he buried his face in her bosom. When his convulsions finally eased, Leisha let go, but Roger held her tight. His eyes were closed, but his mouth moved toward hers. She pulled back quickly, catching Roger as he stumbled drunkenly.
I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Leisha guided him back to the desk chair where he sat heavily and held a breath, as if to suppress a roiling stomach. His face was pale and sweaty.
Drink my tea.
Why did he leave it behind?
Roger was looking at the medallion.
When the Duke threw us out, he took everything in our chambers that wasn't staked to the floor. He could have sold that medal along with all the other things he peddled over the years we drifted. It could have fed and boarded us for months. Night! It could have paid every bar tab Arik had in this city. And that's saying something.
Maybe he knew he didn't deserve it. Maybe he was ashamed of what he'd done.
Oh, I think so. And for some reason, it's worse. I want to hate him.
But he was like a father to you. And you can't bring yourself to do it. I know that feeling.
Leisha turned the medallion over in her hands, feeling the smooth back.
Roger, what were your parents' names?
Callie and Jessam. Why?
Leisha laid the medallion on the desk and reached into one of the many pockets of her apron, pulling forth the small leather bundle that held her ward-edging tools.
If this medal is meant to honor your being saved from the massacre at Riverbridge, then it should honor everyone.
With a smooth, flowing script, she etched Callie, Jessam, and Gerald into the soft metal. When she was finished, the names glittered in the firelight. Roger looked at them with wide eyes as Leisha took the heavy chain and put it over his head.
When you look at this, don't think of Arik's failure. Remember those whose sacrifice went unsung.
I'll never let it out of my reach.
I think you will. If it comes down to saving the medal or someone's life. You're not Arik, Roger. You're made of sterner stuff.
Time I proved it.
In the morning.
Hold on to your wits and let me do the talking.
Roger spoke to Garrett as they entered the Jongleurs Guild.
Don't be fooled by the bright smiles and motley. Half the men in here can slip the purse right from your pocket without you ever knowing.
Garrett reflexively slapped his hand to his pocket.
Don't clutch it either. You're just advertising where you keep it.
So what should I do?
Just keep your hands at your sides and don't let anyone bump into you.
Garrett nodded and followed close behind as Roger navigated the halls. Finally, they came to the offices of the Guildmaster.
Roger Halfgrip, to see Guildmaster Charles.
The man looked up sharply. It was David, Charles' secretary, whom Roger had met before.
Are you mad? Coming here after all this time? The Guildmaster will have your stones.
Not if he wants to keep his own, he won't.
As you say, sir, I will inform the Guildmaster you're waiting.
He went to the heavy oak doors of the Guildmaster's office and vanished inside.
Here? Now?
A moment later, the doors burst open to reveal Guildmaster Charles. Rather than the motley almost all jongleurs wore, the Guildmaster was dressed in a fine linen shirt and wool waistcoat, his beard trim and his hair combed neatly back with oil. He looked more like a royal than a jongleur.
You've got some stones coming back here, Halfgrip. We had a ripping funeral for you, and you still owe me.
He glanced at David.
5,000 glats, give or take a few dozen.
We can sort that first.
Roger pulled a purse of the warded man's ancient coins from his pocket and tossed it to the Guildmaster. The coins were worth twice his debt, at least. Charles' eyes lit up at the glitter of gold as he opened the purse. He snatched a coin at random and bit it, his scowl vanishing at the imprint his teeth made in the soft metal. He looked back to Roger.
I suppose I can make some time to hear your excuses.
He stepped aside to allow Roger and Garrett into his office.
David, bring some tea for our guests.
David brought in the tea, and Roger slipped him another gold coin, likely more money than the clerk saw in a year.
That's for the paperwork, to make me alive again.
You'll be off the pyre and back among the living by sunset.
All right, Roger. What in the night happened last year, and where in the core have you been? One day you and Jacob are raking in the clats to pay your debt, and the next I get a note from some clerk asking me to pay for the pyre for Master Jacob's body in the city cold house, with you just vanished.
Master Jacob and I were attacked, spent months in hospice recovering, and when I was well, I thought it best to leave town for a bit. But since then, I've been witnessing the greatest ripping tampweed tale anyone's ever seen, and the best part is, it's true.
Not good enough, Halfgrip. Attacked by who?
Who do you think?
What's important is that you're all right.
Someone put you in the hospice? You just tell me where to find him and how—
We're not here for that.
To the core with tea. I could do with a real drink.
His hand shook a little as he reached into his desk, producing a glazed clay jug and three cups. He poured a generous portion in each and handed them out.
To choosing our battles wisely.
Immediately, Garrett's eyes bulged and his face turned bright red.
Creator boy, you don't gulp it. That's Angerian brandy, and likely older than you are. It's meant to be sipped.
Sorry, sir.
They're used to watered ale in the hollow. Great foaming mugs that giants like Garrett throw back by the dozen. What little spirit they have goes right from the fermenting tub to the glass.
No appreciation for the subtle. And you, Halfgrip?
I was Eric's apprentice, wasn't I? I was drinking brandy before I had hair on my seed pods.
The hollow, you say?
Aye, I did.
You're the warded man's fiddle wizard?
Charles sat back, regarding Roger. After a moment, he nodded.
Guess it's not too much of a surprise at that. I always thought you had a bit of magic in your fiddling. All right, Roger. You can sit there smugly all day, but I have a guild to run. You're telling me you were in Cutter's Hollow for the coming of the warded man?
I wasn't just in the hollow for the coming of the warded man. He arrived with me and Alicia Paper.
The one they call the Ward Witch?
That's right.
If you're spinning some ale story at me, Roger, I swear by the sun I'll—
It's no ale story, this. Every word is true.
You and I both know that we're talking about a story every jongleur alive would kill for. So let's skip to the end. How much do you want for it?
I'm not motivated by money anymore, Guildmaster.
Don't tell me you've had some kind of religious awakening. Eric would roll over in his grave. This warded man may fill seats at a jongleur show, but you don't actually think he's the deliverer, do you?
Both men looked to see one of Garrett's chair arms had broken off in the big man's grip.
He is the deliverer, and I'll have at any man that says otherwise.
You'll do no such thing. He said himself he isn't, and unless you want me to tell him what an ass you're making of yourself, you'll keep your peace.
Garrett glared at him a moment, and Roger felt his blood run cold, but he met the stare with one of his own and didn't back down an inch. After a moment, Garrett calmed and looked sheepishly at the guildmaster.
I'm sorry about the chair.
Think nothing of it.
I'm not qualified to say he's the deliverer or not. Until last year, I thought the warded man's very existence was an ale story. I spun more than a few of them myself, making them up as I went along. But he's real. He kills demons with his bare hands, and he has powers I can't explain.
Jongleur's tricks.
I've dazzled my share of yokels with magic tricks, Guildmaster. I'm not some bumpkin taken in by sleight of hand and flash powders. I'm not calling him Creator Scent, but he has real magic, sure as the sun shines.
Let's say you're telling the truth. That still doesn't explain why you're here if you aren't looking to sell me the story.
Oh, I'll sell it. I composed a song, The Battle of Cutter's Hollow, that will be called for in every alehouse and square in the city. And there are enough stories from the last year to keep your jonglers working just to empty their collection hats so the people can fill them again.
And what do you want if not money?
I need to train others to use fiddle magic, but I'm no teacher. I've had apprentices for months now, and they can fiddle well enough to spin dancers in a reel, but none of them can shift a Corling's mood from more than blood-crazed to savage.
There are two aspects of music, Roger. Skill and talent. One is learned, the other is not. In all my years, I've never seen someone with talent like yours. You have a natural gift that no fiddle instructor can teach.
So you won't help?
I didn't say that. I just want you forewarned. Perhaps there's something we can do, even so. Did Eric teach you sound signs?
Roger looked at the guildmaster curiously and shook his head.
It's using your hands to give instructions to a group of players.
Like a conductor?
No. A conductor's players already know the piece. A sound signaler can compose on the spot, and if his players know the signs, they can immediately follow.
Honest word?
Honest word. We have a number of masters who can teach the art. I'll send a lot of them to Deliverer's Hollow and assign them to follow your word.
Roger blinked.
It's not entirely unselfish of me. Whatever stories you give us now will do for a short while, but Deliverer or no, this is the defining event of our time, and the tale is still unfolding. The Hollow is clearly at the crux of it, and I've wanted to send jongleurs there for some time, but with the flux at first and then the refugees, no one has had the stones to go. If you can promise safety and board, I'll persuade them.
I can guarantee it.
A few weeks after Renna's night in the outhouse, there was a visitor to the farm. Her heart jumped at the sight of a traveler on the road, but it wasn't Kobe Fisher. It was his father, Garrick. Garrick Fisher was a big, burly man, much like his son in appearance. In his 50s, he had only a few streaks of white in his thick, curly black hair and beard. He nodded curtly to Renna as he pulled up in his cart.
Your dad around, girl?
Renna nodded.
Run and fetch him, then.
Renna nodded again and ran into the fields, her heart pounding. What could he want? Had he come to speak for Kobe? Did he still think of her? She was so preoccupied that she nearly crashed into her father as she emerged from a row of corn stalks.
Night, girl. What the car's gotten into you now?
Garrick Fisher just rode in. He's waiting for you in the yard.
He is he?
Tanner!
Garrick was still sitting in the cart when they came into the yard. He hopped down and held out his hand.
Good to see you looking well. You too, Fisher. What brings you out these ways? I brought you some fish. Good trout and catfish. Still alive and swimming. Toss some bread in the barrels and they'll keep a good while. Reckon it's been a while since you had fresh fish out here.
Well, that's real thoughtful.
Harl helped Garrick unload the cargo.
Least I could do. Ugh. Whew. So it's hot today. Long trip out. Now I'm mighty thirsty. Think we might sit a spell under the shade of your porch before I head back.
Harl nodded and the two men went and sat on the old rockers on the porch. Renna fetched a pitcher of cool water and brought it out with a pair of cups.
Mind if I smoke?
Girl, fetch my pipe and leaf pouch.
Harl shared the pouch with Garrick. Renna brought a taper from the fire to light them.
That's good leaf.
Grow it myself. Hog buys most of his smoke leaf from Southwatch, and they always keep the best and sell him the stale dregs. Girl, fill a pouch for Mr. Fisher to take back with him.
Renna nodded and went inside, but she hung by the door, listening. With the formalities done with, the real talk would begin soon, and she didn't want to miss a word.
Sorry it took me so long to come. Meant no disrespect.
None taken.
Old town's buzzing about this business between the kids. Got it from Hog's daughter or some that. Good wives ain't got nothing better to do with their time than gossip and rumor mongering. Want to apologize for my boy's behavior. Kobe's fond of telling me he's a grown man and can handle his own affairs. But grown is as grown does, I say. Weren't right what he done.
That's undersaid.
Well, you ought to know that after you sent him running home with his tail between his legs, I caught wind and stepped in. I promise you, won't happen again.
Well, glad to hear it. If I were you, I'd beat some sense into that boy.
If I were you, I'd tell my daughter to keep her skirt up instead of putting sin in the mind of every man passes by.
Oh, I had my words with her. She won't be sinning no more. I put the fear of the Creator in her, honest word.
Been more than words if it was one of my girls. I'd have caned her backside raw.
You discipline your way, Fisher, and I'll do mine.
Fair and true. That sop heart of tender would have married him if they'd made it to Boggins Hill before you caught him.
Ah, he's always been too soft. Tender needs to punish wickedness, and I condone it.
Girl ain't been sick none.
Still got her moon blood.
No disrespect, but my lazy-about son's got prospects for the first time in his life. And Nomi and I aim to find him a proper bride, not some scandal.
Your son ain't got no prospects at all. He puts his hand on my daughter again.
Can't say I'd think any different if it was one of my girls. Reckon we understand each other.
Reckon we do. Girl, where's that leaf?
Rena jumped, having forgotten all about the pouch. She ran to the smoke leaf barrel and filled a sheepskin pouch.
Coming!
Harl scowled at her when she returned and gave her a slap on the rump for being slow. He gave the pouch to Garrick, and they watched him climb into his cart and trundle off.
Do you think it's true, Mrs. Scratch?
Rena asked the mother cat as she nursed her kits that night. They scrambled over one another in a great pile, fighting for the teats as Mrs. Scratch lay out behind the broken wheelbarrow in the barn, where she'd hidden her litter.
Do you think the tender would really marry us if we went to him? Kobe said it was so, and Garrick too. Oh, could you imagine?
Rena picked up one of the kits, kissing its head.
Rena Messenger.
It sounded good. It sounded right.
I could make it to Town Square. It's a long way, but I could run it in 4 hours or so. If I went late in the day, Dak could never make it out in time, not with his aching joints.
She glanced over at the cart.
Especially not if he can't ride. But what if Kobe's away when I come? Or if he doesn't want me anymore?
As she pondered that awful thought, the prodigal tabby returned, a fat mouse in its teeth. It laid the catch by Mrs. Scratch, and Rena thought it was a sign from the Creator himself. She waited for days in case her father suspected she'd overheard Garrick. She went through the plan over and over in her mind, knowing this would be her last chance to escape. If he caught her and threw her back in the outhouse, she doubted she'd survive, much less dare to run again. Her father came for lunch past noon each day and took his time at eating before going back out into the fields. If she ran then, she could make it to Town Square with 2 hours of daylight left. Harl wouldn't notice she was gone in time to follow her before the Corlings rose and would have to wait till morning, or at least stop for succor along the way. If Kobe was in the square, that left them the rest of the day to go up Boggins Hill and see the tender. If not, she would run on up the road to Jeff's farm. She'd never been there herself, but Lukic had, and said it was 2 hours' walk up the north road from the square. She should be able to run it in plenty of time, and Elaine would hide her if Harl came looking. She knew she would. When the day finally came, she was careful not to do anything out of the ordinary. She made her rounds and did her chores exactly as she had every day in the last week, careful to keep the pattern. Harl came out of the fields for lunch, and she had stew ready.
Stay for seconds? Want to finish out the pot so I can scrub it and start fresh for supper.
Yeah. Oh, I ain't gonna turn down another bowl of your stew, Ren. Should have had you at the pot all these years instead of Benny.
He pinched her behind as she bent to fill his bowl. Rena wanted to dump the boiling stew in his lap, but she swallowed the urge and gave him the stew with a smile.
Nice to see you smile on your girl. You had a sourpuss since your sister and the young'uns left.
Guess I've gotten used to things.
She waited a count of 100 after Harl left the table, then got up swiftly and went to the cutting board where she had piled vegetables for a stew she never meant to make. She took the knife and went out to the barn. The only draft animals they had were two mollies. Rena looked at them sadly, having cared for them ever since Harl brought the two foals home from Mac Pasture's farm. Could she really do this? Harl's farm was the only world she knew. The few times she had been to Town Square or Boggins Hill, she had felt suffocated by all the people, unable to understand how anyone could keep their head in such a crowd. Would they accept her? Did she really have a reputation as a whore? Would men try and force themselves on her, thinking her witless and willing? Her heart pounded so loud it was deafening, but she steadied herself until a knife in her hand stopped shaking, and she raised it determinedly. She cut all the saddle girths and the harnesses to the cart and the bridles and reins. She hammered the pin out of one of the wheels on the wagon and kicked it free, splitting the wheel with a stone axe. Letting the axe fall to the ground, she reached into her apron pocket, pulling out the long brookstone necklace Kobe had given her. She had known better to wear it when her father might see, but she had treasured it in her secret moments. She put it on now, and it felt right about her shoulders, a proper promise gift. Then she took up the skin of water she had hidden, slipped out the barn door, lifted her skirts, and ran down the road as fast as she could. The run was harder than Rena thought, if not longer. She was strong, but unused to running distances. Her lungs burned before long, and her thighs cried out in protest. She stopped when she had no choice, gulping water from the skin and panting hard, but she never rested more than a few minutes before setting off again. By the time she made it to the bridge over the brook, her eyes were blurry, and she felt drunk on Boggins' ale. She collapsed on the bank, dunking her face in the cold running water and drinking deeply. Her head clear for the first time in almost an hour, she looked up at the sky. The sun was dipping low, but there was time enough if she kept on. She saw a few people as she ran through the square, mostly folk checking their wards for the night. They looked at her curiously, but she ignored them, heading for the one place everyone in Tibbetsbrook knew, Hogg's General Store.
The shop's closed.
Stam Taylor was heading down Hogg's porch steps as Rena started her way up. He stumbled, and Rena had to stop to catch him.
What do you mean the shop's closed? Hogg's supposed to be open till sunset.
Kobe wasn't at the store. She had no idea where to look for him and would have to run on to Elaine.
That's what I said. So I had a bit too much ale and sloshed up a bit. But like that's reason to kick poor Stam out like a burly.
Rena caught a whiff of him and recoiled. The vomit on his shirt was still wet. It seemed some gossip like that about Stam being a drunk was all too true.
Yeah.
Setting him on the rail, she ran up the steps and pounded on the door.
Mr. Roscoe, it's Rena Tanner. I need to see Kobe Fisher.
He's already gone. Just been sitting here on his porch a spell trying to get my feet under me.
Rena looked at him in horror, and Stam misunderstood the look.
Don't you worry yourself on account of old Stam Taylor, girl. I've been worse off than this plenty times. I'll be fine.
Rena nodded, waiting for him to stumble away before she ran around the back of the store. She doubted Hogg would trust anyone, even Kobe, inside his store when he wasn't there. If Kobe lived in the back, there had to be another entrance. She was right, and found a little room next to the stables, probably meant to store tack, but big enough for a chest and a cot. A moment later, Kobe opened the door.
Rena! What are you doing here?
Kobe stuck his head out the door and looked around, then grabbed her arm and pulled her inside. She moved in to embrace him, but he had not let go her arm and kept her away.
Did anyone see you come?
Just Stam Taylor out front, but he's so drunk he probably won't even remember.
She tried to move toward him again, but still he held her back.
You shouldn't have come, Ren.
What?
You have to get out of here before someone finds you. If your dad doesn't kill me, mine will.
You've seen 30 summers and you're the size of a horse. Are you more scared of our dads than I am?
Your dad won't kill you, Ren. He will me.
No, he'll just make me pray I was dead.
All the more reason you should go before he finds us together. Even if the tender marries us, they won't let it go. You don't know my dad. He has it in his head that I'm going to marry Eber Marsh's daughter. Even if I do it with a pitchfork at my back. Paid Eber a lot of fish for the promise.
Then let's run off. Go to Sunny Pasture or even the Free Cities. You can join the Real Messengers Guild.
And sleep out in the naked night? Are you mad?
But you said you loved me. You said nothing could keep us apart.
That was before your dad almost cut my stones off and mine did worse. I shouldn't stay here tonight either, in case Harl comes looking before dark. You go to Boggins Hill and stay with your sister. I'll run to my dad so he knows I didn't do nothing. Come on.
He put a hand behind Renna's back, propelling her toward the door. She went along shocked and bewildered. Kobe opened the door, only to find Harl standing there, knife in hand.
Caught you.
He grabbed Renna with his free hand, hard, bony fingers digging painfully into her arm.
Run on and beg your sister, sucker. I'll be along presently to deal with you.
His eyes flicked to Kobe as he shoved her toward the door.
It's not what it looks like. I've never asked her to come.
Cor, you didn't. I made you a promise, boy, and I aim to keep it.
Harl looked back at Renna, frozen in fear.
Get going! You'll be a week in the outhouse as it is. Don't make it two.
Renna recoiled in horror, and Harl turned from her. The night in the outhouse flashed through her mind again, seemingly endless hours of torment relived in barely a second. She thought about the aftermath, the smell of her father's bed and the weight of his wrinkled bones atop her as he grunted and thrust. She thought of going back to the farm, and something inside her snapped.
No!
She leapt at her father, nails digging at his face like claws. Harl fell back in shock, knocking his head on the floor. She tried to wrest the knife from his hands, but Harl was stronger and kept his grip. Kobe was standing by then. He made no move to move toward them.
Kobe, help me!
Little bitch!
Harl dropped the knife as his hands found her throat. Renna thrashed as hard as she could, but Harl had locked on and wouldn't budge. Blood ran down his arm and dripped onto her face as she gasped for air that could not come. She saw madness in her father's eyes and realized he meant to kill her.
That's enough! You'll kill her!
That's enough of you, boy!
Harl let go of Renna's throat with one hand and grabbed his knife when Kobe came close. As Kobe reached for him, Harl pivoted and thrust the blade between his legs. Kobe's face went bright red, and he looked down in horror, blood pouring down the knife. Harl pulled the knife free and buried it in his heart. Harl got off Renna and went to Kobe, pulling the knife free.
I warned you more than once, boy. You should have listened.
He slipped the knife back in its sheath where it rested barely a moment before Renna pulled it free and buried it in his back. Again and again she stabbed, crying as blood splattered her face and soaked her dress. Jeff Bales finished checking the porch wards not a moment too soon. His family was already inside, children washing for supper, Elaine and Noreen in the kitchen. He looked out as the last rays of sun vanished and heat leached out of the ground, giving the demons a path up from the core. As those stinking gray mists began to rise, he moved inside, even though it would be a few moments more before the corling solidified. Jeff didn't believe in taking chances where demons were concerned. Down the road, someone was running hard for the farm. Jeff took his axe, always by the door, and moved out as far as the porch wards would allow, his eyes flicking nervously to the corlings coalescing in the yard. He thought of his eldest son and how he would not have hesitated to run out and help the stranger. But Arlen was dead 14 years now, and Jeff had never been so brave.
Be strong and run! Sucker is at hand!
Corlings, still more smoke than flesh, looked up at his call, and Jeff tightened his grip on the axe. He wouldn't leave the safety of the wards, but he would strike a demon to clear the path if one came too close.
What's happening?
Keep everyone inside! No matter what you hear, stay inside!
He pulled the door shut, then looked back. The stranger was closer now. It was a woman, her dress soaked in blood, running as if her life depended upon it as well it did. She had something in her hand, but Jeff couldn't see what it was. Corlink swiped at her as she passed, but their claws lacked substance and merely scratched when they should have torn.
Run on!
And then she was in the yard, and almost to the porch. Jeff recognized her just as a flame demon, fully formed, leapt into her path.
Renna!
But it was not Renna Tanner he saw, but his wife Sylvie, murdered by a flame demon 14 years ago in that very place. Something hardened in him then, and he was off the porch before he knew it, swinging the steel axe with all his might. Jeff grabbed Renna's arm and pulled her along behind him as he charged to safety. He tripped on the porch steps and they went down in a heap, but when a wood demon came at them, it struck the outer net.
Renna! Renna!
She was drenched in blood, her dress soaked and her arms and face covered, but he could see no injury on her. Clutched tightly in her right hand was a large bone-handled knife. It, too, was coated in blood.
Renna, are you all right? Whose blood is this?
The door opened, and Elaine came out.
Renna!
Whose blood is this?
That's Daz's knife. I'd recognize it anywhere. He never lets it out of his sight.
Creator.
Ren, what happened? Are you hurt? Where's Daz? He all right?
Best bring her inside. Put the youngins in their rooms and I'll take her to ours.
Elaine nodded and went in first as Jeff lifted Renna's quivering form in his strong arms. He laid Renna down on his straw mattress and turned his back as Elaine came in with a bowl of warm water and a clean cloth. Elaine pried the bloody knife from her hand and laid it on the night table before undressing her and cleaning the blood from her with firm, even strokes of the cloth.
What do you suppose happened?
Renna was bundled in the covers, still staring silently off into space.
I don't know. Long run from here to Daz's farm, even if you leave the road and cut straight across. She must have been running for hours.
Looked like she came up from town.
I don't know.
Whatever happened, it wasn't the Corlings that done it. Not in the middle of the day.
Jeff, I need you to go out to the farm tomorrow. Maybe they were attacked by night wolves or bandits. I don't know. I'll keep Renna hidden until you get back.
Bandits and night wolves? In Tibbetts Brook?
Well, just go and see.
What if I see Harline dead of a knife wound?
Then you mop the blood and build a pyre. And for all anyone ever need know, he slipped off the hay ladder and broke his neck.
We can't just lie. If she killed someone...
What in the core do you think we've been doing all these years?
Elaine,
have I been a good wife? Kept your house? Given you sons? Do you love me?
Of course I do.
Then you'll do this for me, Jeff Bales. You'll do it for all of us. And for Benny and her boys, too. There ain't no need for anything what's ever happened on that farm to reach the town's ears. What they make up is bad enough and to spare.
All right. I'll leave after breakfast.
Jeff was up with the dawn, hurrying through his morning chores despite the tired ache in his bones. They had tried all night to get a response out of Renna, but she simply stared at the ceiling, neither sleeping nor eating. After breakfast, he saddled their best mare.
Reckon I'll avoid the road myself. Take a shortcut through the field southeast.
Elaine nodded, throwing her arms around him and hugging him tightly.
Best to get going while there's still time enough for a return trip.
Jeff looked up to see a cart approaching carrying the herb gatherer Colleen Trigg wringing her hands with worry and the town speaker Celia the Baron looking grim. Beside the cart on one side rode Rusko Hogg and on the other Garrick Fisher and Radic Laurie, Garrick's great uncle and the speaker for Fishing Hole. On foot behind them were Tender Harrell and what looked like half the men of Fishing Hole, armed with thin fishing spears. Garrick kicked his horse ahead when the farm came in sight, galloping right up to the porch where Elaine stood.
Where's she?
Where's who?
Don't play games with me, woman. I come for your whoring, witch and murdering sister, and you well know it.
You stop right there, Garrick Fisher.
Noreen Cutter came out of the house holding Jeff's axe. She had lived on Jeff's farm since before his wife died and was as much a part of the family as any.
This ain't your property. You keep back and state your business unless you're looking to take a Corlin by the horns.
My business is that Renna Tanner murdered her own dad and my son, and I'll see her court for it. Ain't no point in hiding her.
Tender Harrell caught up and interposed himself between Garrick and the women. He was young and strong, a match for the older, if just as bulky, Garrick.
Well, there's no proof of anything yet, Garrick. We just need to ask her a few questions is all. And you, if she said anything since Jeff left.
We need to do more than that, Tender.
Radic got off his horse. He was born Radek Fisher, but everyone in the Brook called him Radek Lowry because he was speaker for the Hole on the town council and legal arbitrator of disputes in his borough. A mass of grizzled hair from ears to chin, the crown of his head was bald as an egg. He was older than Celia, but shorter-tempered, full of righteous passion with a knack for stirring it in others.
Girl needs to answer for her crimes.
Hogg was the next to dismount. He was imposing as always, the man who owned half of Tibbetts Brook outright and held debts from the rest.
Garrick speaks honest words when he says your father and Kobe Fisher dead. My girls and I went to investigate some shouting we heard at the store last evening and found him in the back room I rented Kobe. Dead. Not just stabbed. He was mutilated, both of them. Stamp Taylor says he saw your sister there just before it happened.
Horrible. And that's why it's best we see Renna right away.
So clear the door!
I am Speaker in Tibbetts Brook, Radek Lowry, not you.
Jeff reached out to help Celia down from the cart. As soon as her feet touched the ground, she gripped her skirts to keep them from the dirt and strode over. The younger men, outweighing her several times over, shrank back at the force of her presence. Only Radek stood his ground. He had ousted Celia as town speaker more than once over the years, and if age was power in Tibbetts Brook, he was stronger, if not by much.
Colleen Harrell, Roscoe, Radek, and I will need to go in and see her.
It wasn't a request. The five of them were half the town council, and Jeff could only nod and stand aside, allowing them entrance.
I'm going too.
No, you're not. Your blood is up, and none can blame you. We're here to learn what happened, not stake the girl without a trial.
Radek put a hand on Garrick's shoulder.
She ain't getting away, Gare. I promise you that.
Garrick gritted his teeth, but he nodded and stepped back as they went inside. Renna was still lying in the same position they had placed her in the night before, staring at the ceiling. She blinked occasionally. Colleen went right to her.
Oh, dear.
Celia spotted the bloody knife on the night table.
And here?
Radek kicked a basin by the door. Renna's dress was soaking within, the water pink with blood.
Still think we're just here to ask a few questions, Tender?
Colleen looked over the bruises on Renna's face with a concerned eye and a firm hand, then turned to the others.
Nothing's broken, but she's taken quite a beating, and there are bruises around her throat like she was choked.
Celia went and sat down on the bed beside Renna. She reached out gently, brushing the hair from Renna's sweating face.
Randa, dear, can you hear me?
The girl didn't react at all.
Been like this all night?
Celia put her hands on her knees, pushing to her feet. She took the knife and then turned and ushered everyone out of the room, closing the door.
Seen this before. After demon attacks, mostly. Survivors get more of a fret than they can handle and are left staring off into the air.
Will she get better?
Sometimes they snap out of it in a few days.
Sometimes?
Won't lie to you, Elaine Bales. This is the worst thing ever happened in Tibbetts Brook as far back as I can recall. I've been speaker on and off for 30 years. I've seen a great many folk die before their time, but there ain't never been one killed in anger. That kind of thing may happen in the free cities, but not here.
Renna couldn't have.
That's why I was hoping to talk to her first, dear. And get the story from her lips. The Fishers have come looking for blood, and they won't be satisfied without it. Or a good explanation.
We got reason. It's our kin dead.
In case you ain't noticed, my kin's dead too.
All the more reason to want justice.
Celia held the bloody knife out to Tender Harrell.
Tender, if you'd be so kind as to wrap this and hide it in your robes till we get to town, I'd be grateful.
Harrell nodded, reaching for it.
What in the core you think you're doing? The whole town's got a right to see this.
Use your head, Lowry. That knife's evidence, and all have a right to see it. But not with 24 men outside with spears and a defenseless girl numb with fright. A tender ain't gonna steal it.
Elaine fetched a cloth, and Celia wrapped the knife, giving it to the tender, who stowed it safely in his robes. She gathered her skirts and strode outside, back arched and head up high as she faced the gathered men in the yard.
She's in no condition to talk.
We're not looking to talk.
I don't care what you're looking to do. No one's doing anything until the town council meets on this.
The council? Is that some quarreling attack? She murdered my son!
Now, you don't know that, Garrick. Could be he and Harl killed each other.
Even if she didn't hold a knife, she'd done it. Witching my son into sinning and shaming her dad.
The law is the law, Garrick.
She gets a council meeting where you can make your accusations and she can say her piece before we name her guilty. Bad enough we've had two killings. I won't have your mob doing a third because you can't wait on justice.
Garrick looked to Raddick for support, but the speaker from Fishing Hall was silent, edging toward Harrell. Suddenly, he shoved the tender against the wall, reaching into his robes.
She ain't telling you all. The girl had a red dress soaking.
He held Harrell's knife up for all to see.
And a bloody knife!
Cor, what's your law? If it means I can't avenge my son!
You'll murder that poor girl over my dead body.
Celia moved to stand directly in front of the door with the rest of the council and Jeff's family.
That what you want? To be named murderers yourselves, every Fisher?
Bah! You can't hang us all. We're taking the girl, and that's that. Stand aside or we'll go clean through you.
Hands in the air, Rusko stepped aside. Celia glared at him.
Traitor.
I'm no traitor, ma'am. Just a visiting businessman, and it isn't my place to take sides in this kind of dispute.
You're as much a part of this town as anyone. You've been in Town Square 20 years and on the council near all of them. If you've a place that's more home than this, maybe it's time you went back to it.
I am sorry, ma'am, but I gotta be fair to all. Standing against the whole borough is just bad business.
Once a year at least, half the town comes to me ready to run you out for a cheat, like they did to you in Milne and Angiers and Creator knows where else. And every year, I talk them out of it. Remind them what a benefit your store is and how things were before you came. But you stand aside now, and I see to it no decent person sets foot in your shop again.
You can't do that!
Oh, yes, I can, Rusko. Just you try me if you think it ain't so.
Raddick scowled, and it turned venomous when Hogg went back to stand with Celia in the doorway.
I don't want to hear it, Raddick. We can wait a day or two. Any man puts hands on Renatana before the council meets is banned from the store.
Celia turned to Raddick, her eyes blazing.
How long, Laurie? How long can Fishing Hole go without bales of grain and livestock, marsh rice, Boggins ale, cutter's wood? I'm betting not nearly so long as we can go without ripping fish.
Fine. You call the council. But we'll lock the girl up in Fishing Hole until she has her trial.
Ha! You think I'd entrust her to you?
Then where? I'll be correspond before I let her stay here with her kin, where she could run off.
We'll put her in my spinning room. It's got a stout door, and you can nail the shutters and set a guard if you wish.
Are you sure that's wise?
Oh, fell. She's just a little girl.
A little girl that killed two grown men.
Nonsense. I doubt she could have killed one of those strong men herself, much less two.
Fine, but I'm keeping this.
Raddick held up the knife.
And that bloody dress, until the council comes.
Celia scowled, and their eyes met as they matched Will's. She knew Raddick Lowry could whip the town into a frenzy with the items, but she didn't have much choice in the matter.
I'll send runners today. We'll meet in 3 days.